are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. The Rock is in the house style as we're kicking it with a 2017 Baseball Hall of Fame inductee, Tim Raines. Tim Raines joins us in about 20-25 minutes time on the program today, and we're extremely excited to have the Hall of Fame inductee. We're also excited to have Steve Merrill on the program. We're going to talk some NASCAR as they go to Vegas, my former adopted city. And, you know, I never went to the race in Vegas because, as me and Merrill have talked about, it's in the middle of freaking nowhere, all right? But, you know, when I lived in Vegas, you know, I didn't go to a lot of things, actually, right? But that's besides the point. You know what? I bet the race, and we got some good fantasy plays for this race as well. There's a lot of tough options here, man. Do you go with Harvick? Harvick's pretty obvious. Is it too obvious? Harvick's like the Russell Westbrook of fantasy NASCAR. So we'll talk some fantasy NASCAR. We'll talk some betting NASCAR. Merrill's into both. We'll also talk some college basketball with Steve Merrill, as he likes college basketball as well. The Raging Redhead, he likes college basketball. He likes NHL hockey, and he loves Hot Roster. So we're going to talk some fantasy hockey, some fantasy basketball. We'll talk some NHL hockey. The Raging Redhead, of course, loves to slam down the NHL picks. And our boy, camera two and camera one and two, Drew. Actually, that's not true. Camera one is just camera one. Well, camera one's no longer with us. We miss you, Mikey, and we wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors. But you know, we'll get to that at a future date. So yeah, the Raging Redhead in studio with us. But camera two, Drew, he's still here. His NHL picks have been pretty good too. So maybe we'll get him to shout out a couple of picks a little bit later on. But let's be real, man. It's all about the Hall of Famer. And, you know, I've been doing this stuff for like, this is my 16th year. I'm used to guests canceling at the last second and stuff like that. But I'll be very disappointed if somehow Tim Raines doesn't come on today. But, you know, if he doesn't, we got the Raging Redhead waiting in the bullpen. So it's just more time for Cam. All right? And it's also more time for the Washington Redskins to screw things up. As National Football League free agency has begun. I told you guys that the NFL and NFL GMs are as unpredictable as Kim Jong-un is, okay? You don't know what the hell these guys are going to do. And yesterday when I saw that Brock Osweiler got dealt from the Texans to the Cleveland Browns, I was thinking, what the hell are the Cleveland Browns doing? You guys got a million draft picks. Why would you want to take the Houston Texans problem off of their hands just so they can sign Tony Romo? But we're living in a capologist world right now, right? So it's almost like the NFL. We've arrived to the point like in the NBA. This year in the NBA, there was actually real trades. Kind of rare. There were actually real trades. But generally in the NBA, what are big trades? You know, teams are usually happy that they get crappy contracts in the NBA. Oh, that's great. We got a bunch of crap. We're going to unload it all at the end of the year, and we're going to be rich. We're going to have all this money. And essentially, that's what the Cleveland Browns did. Now, technically, it's illegal by NFL definition to actually buy a draft pick. You can't be buying draft picks from teams. But essentially, Cleveland basically spent $16 million for two draft picks, and they're stockpiling the draft picks. They might trade Osweiler. They might let Osweiler go. Hell, they might play Brock Osweiler. Who the hell knows at this point in time? I was convinced. At first, I was like, the Browns are idiots. And you know, I will give a shout out to Sooner Lisa in Oklahoma, who tweeted me and stated, you know, well, that's why they're called the Clowns. But in all actuality, you know, there's a little method to their madness, actually, as opposed to what's going on in Washington, where it's just madness, okay? Just absolute freaking madness. And only Daniel Snyder could screw this up. Like, how the hell are you getting in your own way of this thing? The Washington Redskins have been a laughing stock and a serious you know, there's been a serious, serious dislike surrounding Snyder and what he's done to the traditional power of the Redskins. There's been a lot of backlash. He's one of the most hated owners in sports. But, you know, I'm not talking about, like, the overall perception. We all know Daniel Snyder. Oh, he's a jerk, right? But the thing is, like, in Washington, they really hate him. You know, like, there's a lot of stuff that they really don't like about this guy. And, you know, they just tolerate it that he owns the team that they love so much. But the Redskins actually got good, okay? They got good. They made the playoffs 2 years ago. They should have made the playoffs this year. They screwed it up. It is what it is. But the Washington Redskins are a franchise that seemingly seemed like a stable franchise. But for one reason or another, they didn't want to give Kirk Cousins the contract extension. Fine. Well, if you don't want to give him the contract extension, maybe you should stop franchise tagging him every damn year and end up paying him like $24 million a year to play for you. Yeah, you know what? We don't really think you're one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and we don't really want to, you know, give you a long-term deal, even though, you know, every stiff gets $15, $20 million a year now. We don't want to do that. So instead, how about we just franchise tag you and we have to pay you like the max? How's that sound? That's better, isn't it? So that Cousins is laughing. He keeps on getting money, except he's not laughing anymore. DeSean Jackson's got. Pierre Garçon's got. And now they fire the general manager. How the hell do you fire the general manager? How do you fire the general manager the day the free agency starts? Like, that's the definition of, like, being left at the altar, so to speak. But, like, seriously, that's like an NFL team firing the head coach Sunday morning of the first game of the season. You know, so, like, who's doing the deal? Like, what the hell are the Redskins doing? There's a serious-ass revolt going on right now in the city of Washington. Now, the deal is... The deal is, the general manager, McLuhan, he's had some alcohol problems in the past. He's admitted it. You know, well, whatever. Who hasn't? Half the National Football League, you know, owners, executives, and everyone else are drunks, right? So... You know, let's not, like, throw this guy under the bus too much. So he's had, like, drinking issues in the past. The Washington Redskins pulled an Oakley, basically. This is, like, you know, it's very similar. You got, like, the Knicks, Snyder, Dolan, same type of stuff. Instead of just firing the GM and saying, you know what, it wasn't working out. No, they immediately basically throw him under the bus and say, well, chug, old man Patterson, hey, you know, with the bottle. They basically stated he was drunk, he wasn't around at the combine, he's a boozer. He was drunk in a locker room all the time. They basically throw him under the bus. Now, one thing about Washington is Daniel Snyder bought up the whole freaking city, all right? He bought all the media outlets and stuff, so he runs the networks. So basically, there's a lot of bozo, jackass talk show hosts like there are in every city that'll kiss the boss's ass. So there's like a smear campaign going on, oh, this guy was a drunk, this guy was a drunk. Yet the Washington Post, you know, respected newspaper, unless you're Donald Trump, unless you're in Trump, the in Trump administration, the Washington Post respected. But anyways, the Washington Post is not owned by Daniel Snyder. He doesn't control what the Post says, like he controls everyone else. And the fact is, the Washington Post, a respected dude in the Post, says that he was told by a well-placed source in the Redskins management, like 2-3 months ago, that they were going to throw this guy under the bus and they were going to blame alcohol, but that has nothing to do with alcohol. That's just how mean-spirited they are in Washington at the head office. You got a great thing going on there, Snyder. So, you know what? I might be a Buffalo Bill fan, and yeah, it kind of blows. You might be a Brown fan, but man, you got a million picks. You might be a Rams fan, and you're like, oh man, we got Jared Goff. This guy better be good, but at least you're not a Washington freaking Redskin fan. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Game Time Decisions on a Fantasy Sports Network. I am Gabriel Morenci. We are live. The show replays. We encourage you to subscribe to the Fantasy Sports Network. Only $2.99 a month online. You get all the programming, actually, since it seems like everything is digital nowadays. So $2.99 a month, fantasysportsnetwork.com. Check it out right now. We got a great show. We got Tim Raines. You know, we have a lot of Hall of Famers, and sometimes they're like 94 years old. This is like the most current Hall of Famer that we've ever had. He's not even in the Hall of Fame yet. All right. He's going to the Hall of Fame. this summer, Tim Raines, and it's about damn time. So Tim Raines on the program today, The Rock, will join us. The Raging Redhead, Cam Stewart, in studio with us. And let's bring in Steve Merrill right now off the top of the program. What's going on, Steve?
Hey, Gabe, doing well.
So, Steve, a lot of stuff to get to here. Let's start off with some NASCAR. I told you earlier in the week, Steve, Las Vegas was going to get that second race, and it's official. They've gotten the second race.
Yeah, I was doing a show in Alabama yesterday. We talk a lot of NASCAR as well, and they mentioned New Hampshire was going to lose a race. Is that what ended up happening?
Yeah, New Hampshire and Kentucky.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I don't know. Like, they're basically going to mix it up, I guess. Like, there's nothing. They're taking an Xfinity race from Kentucky, and they're putting it in Vegas. I guess they're going to have like the three. It's going to be a triple header in Vegas twice. It's the only time they're ever doing this. So yeah, but it's the same owner, Steve. So the guys that own the company that owns Kentucky, New Hampshire, they own Vegas as well. So they basically said, you know, we'll be back. We're just sort of mixing things around here a little. Bit, but yeah, long story short, New Hampshire's out.
Yeah, a little surprised by that, because that is the only Northeast race on the entire schedule, so you figured they could go there twice a year and get some fans. It's also a very unique track. It's a real flat track. Not a great track, though, but yeah, a little surprised New Hampshire lost a race. We'll
Me
have
too.
To see that hold steady.
Yeah, you know, they're always talking about the East Coast. They have Watkins Glen, right? But that's a road course, so it's a little bit different environment. I was surprised to see that, too, but it's the same owner, and, you know, they gave the whole, we're committed, and there'll be races here, don't worry. So I don't know what they're going to do. They just end up screwing someone else down the road. But nevertheless, Kevin Harvick, overwhelming favorite here, plus 400. And, you know, this guy to me, he really is like, he's like the Russell Westbrook of fantasy NASCAR, in which you're almost damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. He's so expensive, he crushes your lineup. But at the same point in time, even if he doesn't win, he racks up a ton of points because he's always leading laps. He is just a lap-leading eater. He won here in 2015. He led 142 laps in the process. At plus 400, though, there's just not enough value when we consider how many times he's fallen short of actually winning the race.
Yeah, and last week, another perfect example. He had the most dominant car without a question at Atlanta, and he gets very unusual for him. He makes a mistake. He gets a pit road speeding penalty late and has to start back in the 30s and still gets up to ninth in just several laps. But just didn't have enough time to get back to first. He led over 100 laps last week in Atlanta for the fifth time in the past six Atlanta races, and I don't think he's won a single one of those, which is incredible. And it goes back to what we talk about each and every week here in the show. The guy has more second place finishes than first place in recent years, so very difficult to play just plus 400 on a guy that comes up short, even though he has the dominant car. With that said, from a fantasy perspective, he probably is worth the high price as he continues to dominate these intermediate speedways, and as you said, he's been one of the best cars at Las Vegas for several years now.
Another guy that's been very good in Las Vegas, loves it here, is Brad Keselowski. He's the second most expensive driver in fantasy, and he's also the second betting favorite as well as of right now. Plus 650, one last week, one here last year, one here in 2014. You know, this guy's always going to be in the mix. Plus 650, I'd like a little bit higher, but nevertheless, like I said, he's second most expensive fantasy guy too.
Yeah, he's actually been even better than Kevin Harvick at Vegas in recent years. He's won two of the last three races here, and he has a seventh and a third place finish in the other two the last 4 years. He won last week at Atlanta. He was very strong there. He's been just as good on intermediate speedways as almost anybody. He and Harvick, two of the best intermediate drivers last season. Their average position was in top seven, top nine most races. So I think from a value perspective, you could almost make a case there's a little more value with Keselowski at 6-1 versus Harvick at 4-1. We'll see where their practice times are. Keselowski had pretty good practice times last week in Atlanta. Harvick did not, and he still dominated the race. That's another thing about Kevin Harvick and some of these other veteran drivers like him. The practice times sometimes are a little bit misleading.
We have to recognize Jimmy Johnson. He's the third betting favorite at 7-1 plus 700. Four-time winner here, but he hasn't won here in a long time. No win since 2010.
He's been top six in four of his last five starts here. The only bad one was 2 years ago when he finished 41st. Obviously, that was an issue. Otherwise, he's been top six in all the other four races at Vegas. He has really been dominant. And what people don't realize, he had the best overall rank last year of any driver on 1.5 mile tracks.
Yeah.
He's been a little inconsistent so far this season. You know, Daytona doesn't mean anything, but last week he didn't run as well as I expected. So we'll see what he does this week. A little bit more of a question mark with him just because he didn't look as good as Atlanta as Harvick and Keselowski did.
You know, Steve, I believe in the last 25 intermediate track races, Jimmy's won 7 of them. He's like you said, he mixes in the wins, but it's kind of all over the place, but you can't discount him. All right, let's get into a guy that I like. I like him in fantasy, and he's, you know, I wish he was more cheaper than Harvick. He is cheaper, but I think Logano can almost give us what Harvick does. Similar situation. He's never won here before, but he's got a best average finish of anyone at 10.7. He finished 6th last week. He was runner-up last year with his boy Keselowski winning that we just showed. Logano is a monster on the cutter intermediate tracks as well. He's plus 750, Steve.
What concerns me, though, is he's just like Kevin Harvick as far as not winning but always really running strong. He had 5 different tracks like this last year. He had a top 3 finish, 2nd or 3rd on 5 different of these tracks, but he didn't win a single one of them last year. So for fantasy, he should be pretty solid. Betting-wise, you know, that concerns you a bit. But he's also teammates with Keselowski, who, as we just talked about, should be very strong here. And Fords have looked really good this year, better than in years past. They've won Daytona and Atlanta so far.
Yep.
So for that reason, Logano probably gets a couple extra points.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in like the downforce packages and all that type of stuff, but Micah Roberts does a great job out of Vegas, and I read he was talking some real garage talk about how they have it figured out, actually, especially on these tracks. So let's get to a guy that I'm betting on a weekly basis, Steve. I'm on board, and I'm going to cash, man. I'm telling you, I'm going to cash. I'm playing him in fantasy, but I'm betting him as well. And me and Steve were talking about this earlier, about how, you know, the fantasy stuff is fun, but I'm not putting big money into this. I'm just going to sort of swing for the fences because of the payback. I'd rather just bet somebody's intermediate long shots and sort of double-digit guys that have a chance to win, Steve, for the time that I'm going to put in and the money that I'm going to get back. And a guy that I'm going to be riding, man, is Kyle Larson. He's 12-1. I like him at the window, and I like him at fantasy. Last week, he started 8th. He finished 2nd. He won at Michigan last year for his first win. He had a strong run at Homestead. Started to come on last year, Steve. Got that first win, came on. He's a great intermediate track driver. I mean, there's not a huge track record in history for him, but, you know, for me, this kid's a keep your eye on, and he's in the mix every week. I like him at 12-1. He's going to be my betting selection.
Yeah, Kyle Larson, you really can throw out the numbers from the past few seasons because he's definitely gotten better as the season goes on, not just the last couple of years, but even last year. He was 26th and 34th at Atlanta and Vegas last spring. And then at the end of the season, in the last 4 intermediate tracks, he had a top 2 and a top 5. Obviously, he's running a lot better now, and he's starting to figure things out. Another guy just like that we keep talking about is Chase Elliott.
Yeah.
He also had a winning car last week. He was probably the 2nd best car the entire race. Ended up finishing 5th at Atlanta. Very misleading, though, as he was probably 2nd only to Kevin Harvick most of the day. Chase Elliott, another guy like Logano in the past, has either been Feast or Phantom. But I think now both of these guys can win several races, and they're going to be more consistent as well. What concerns me with them is they often have, you know, bad finishes outside the top 30. Doesn't seem like that's happening as much with either one of them anymore.
All right, Steve, we've only got a couple of minutes left. We've got Tim Raines coming up in a moment or two, but so let's go rapid fire through a couple of drivers, and I'll quickly pick your brain as far as the college card is concerned tonight. Bush Brothers, obviously, from Las Vegas. It's worked out a hell of a lot better for Kyle here than it has Kurt. Kurt's had bad luck here at home. Kyle's always dangerous, but you know, it's almost too picture perfect that they win this race, so it doesn't work out for them. Kyle's plus 750, Kurt's 14-1, and I wanted to bring up our boy Truex, 10-1, maybe worth a look. And from a fantasy standpoint, I squeezed Paul Menard into my lineup at $6,800.
Yeah, Menard's always good on these big tracks. Casey Kane might be a sleeper. Ryan Newman started 3rd and was very strong last week at Atlanta, had trouble, ended up in the 30s. His battery died, of all things. So Newman, if he has good practice times, could be a sleeper as well. But keep in mind, Kurt Busch and Kevin Harvick teammates are now Ford, which means they share information with Keselowski and Logano. That's another reason I'm kind of big on these Ford cars right now. I just think the information is better with those winning teams.
Duke and North Carolina play again. They just played last Saturday. It's very interesting, actually. Normally, Roy Williams doesn't doesn't care about this stuff. And he's not big on winning these conference tournaments. He'd rather win the regular season title like they did. That's what motivates him. He wants to prepare for the big dance. But with that being stated, he doesn't want to lose to Duke, right? So it's almost like, all right, well, now we got to win this. Duke have depth issues, should catch up to him, I think, after playing DeVille in their last game. Heels won 90-83 last week. Duke won 86-78. Both games went over the number that's posted here at 154, 154 and a half. What's your take?
Yeah, I actually had a best bet on North Carolina last Saturday in that game at UNC. The line was 6.5 to 7. They won by 7, but I thought it was a little misleading. I really felt they outplayed Duke more than the final margin. The officials really kept Duke in that game. You always have to worry about that happening here again. But on the neutral court, I was a little surprised to see the line 4.5, because that's saying that UNC's home court was only worth about 2.5 points last week. And to be honest, it probably was, because the officials are favoring Duke. But with the quick turnaround here, I think the situation is actually better for Duke now, even though I feel like UNC is the better overall team.
Yeah, it just feels weird. Duke and North Carolina playing in Brooklyn.
Yeah, I know. It's wrong, isn't it? Yeah, by the way, they're 49. I think they're 49-49 all time. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. All right. Notre Dame and Florida State, oftentimes we've heard this is the football game of the century. Yeah. Here they are in a big matchup, semifinal ACC. FSU's a good basketball team. They're laying 2.5 here. The Irish just upset Virginia. They split the season series. FSU won a close one in Tallahassee, and then the Irish beat them up by 12 in South Bend.
Yeah, Notre Dame, of course, lives and dies by the three-point shot. When you're playing multiple games in a row, especially on a neutral court without rest, that always concerns you a bit. Florida State does not rely on the three as much. That could end up being the difference in this game.
You know, it's interesting, actually. Notre Dame are 6-0 their last six games. They've never lost in this arena. They're 6-0 at the Barclays for one reason or another.
Yeah, they get good they get good support there. They usually have a semi-home crowd edge, as you know, as well in New York.
Yeah, what a shock.
A lot of alums.
Drunken Irishmen in Brooklyn.
By that, Notre Dame alums working on Wall Street as well, right?
And they're drunk, too. All right, so thanks, Steve. You got green on. So Steve's saying take Notre Dame.
I'm a week early. I'm all confused.
Thanks, Steve. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Gabe.
This is Steve Merrill, ProSportsInfo.com, one of the cover's experts. We take a quick break. Tim Raines, the Hall of Famer, joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Over the last couple of weeks, we've had the opportunity to talk to some great, great baseball guests and some real legends of the game. Me growing up a Montreal Expo fan, I still have a soft spot in my heart for the Expos, and I sincerely believe that the Expos will be back playing Major League Baseball once again. But we had Dave Van Horn on last week. We had Warren Cromartie on yesterday, but we're now joined by one of the greatest Expos ever. That goes without saying, but also one of the greatest players ever to play the game ever, as evident is the fact that he is a 2017 Hall of Fame inductee, two-time World Series champion as a player, World Series champion as a coach, seven-time All-Star, MVP of the All-Star game, National League batting champion, fourth all-time on the all-time stolen base list. From 81-86, he stole 70 or more. So, in other words, since we're on a fantasy sports network, Tim Raines was a hell of a fantasy player as well as a hell of a reality player. The one and only Rock, Tim Raines, joins us. Tim, thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us on a fantasy sports network.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
You know what? Congratulations. Have you gotten used to it yet, hearing Tim Raines, Hall of Famer? How good does that sound, man?
It really sounds good. I mean, I don't think I've gotten used to it, but I really like the way it sounds.
Now, you've been there. You've done that. You've done everything in your career. What was it like when you got the call? We saw Pudge break down in tears. Were there any tears with you? What was the reaction? What was the feeling when you were like, man, this is real. I'm really going to the Hall of Fame.
Well, it was emotional. I mean, it's been brewing up for a long time. It was actually the first year that I actually felt like the chance was real, and I felt like it was really going to happen. It's something I've been really thinking about over the past 10 years. But like I said earlier, man, it was emotional. there were some tears came down. I don't think anyone saw them, but it was really emotional.
I guess after waiting like you did, it's one of those deals where you can't get your hopes up, right? You do, but you don't want to, right?
Exactly. I mean, you know, last year I was pretty excited about the number of votes I got last year, and I felt like only being like 23 votes short of getting in with another year left will give me an opportunity to get in. But still, you don't really know how this is going to turn out. I didn't want to be overly excited. I just wanted to be kind of calm about it, but I really felt like it was going to happen. But, you know, back in the back of my mind, you know, there was still some, not doubt, but some unsureness. And until that phone rung, then I was going to be excited.
And I don't think a lot of people understand the politics that goes into play, in the sense that you're in a unique situation. You're a Montreal Expo. I know you're a White Sox and you're a Yankee, but Tim, you're an Expo, man. And the Expos aren't there anymore. So you don't have that media base. You don't have that organization, you know, telling people, what are you guys waiting for, man? Well, you guys got to do this. But there was one guy in the media that really pounded the pavement for you, didn't he? And that's Jonah Carey, somebody that lives and breathes and dies for the Expos. And I know, man, this guy went to the wall every time he got an opportunity when he was asked about Tim Raines in the Hall of Fame to say, you got to put this guy in.
Yeah, he really did. And I got an opportunity to meet him about 3 years ago. And this guy knew more about me than I knew myself. And really surprised me about all he knew about, you know, the way I played the game. You know, I've never been that player that really was a stat guy, but actually the stats is what got me in, you know. And I think playing in Montreal for the 12 years, we didn't have a big media support throughout the league, because, you know, it was in Canada. It's not a big city. We didn't have the TV at the time. So there was a lot of people really didn't know that much about me because of that. And, you know, Jonah Carey put it out there. He really put it out there, and I owe a lot to him, because, you know, I feel like it played a really big role in the way the voters looked at my career, and obviously it paid off.
There's a lot of talk about the Expos. There's a project to get baseball back. I don't think it's just a pipe dream. I think it's a reality down the road, but obviously patience is a key. But the amount of joy that I see from Expo fans, I mean, Tim, I don't know if you're aware of this, and I'm going to be part of one of the buses. There's buses coming from Quebec City, Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto. Expo fans from around Canada have organized a trip to Cooperstown to watch you get inducted, and it's like they feel as if though, you know, you're representing the Expos and the city of Montreal, and that, you know, the Expos aren't gone, that they're somehow alive. You've given Expo fans a reason to put the jersey on, Tim, and feel alive again. Do you realize, like, how much love and support do you have from Expos fans?
I do, and not only that, you know, I've been going to Montreal with the Blue Jays over the past 3 years,
yeah,
and they have really showed me a lot of support. Every time, you know, they see my face or they hear my name, you know, they go berserk, and I love it, you know, and it's something that, you know, throughout my career, I enjoy, you know, and even now that I no longer play, but, you know, every time I go back to Montreal and every time someone sees me, they come up to me and they tell me how much they enjoyed watching me play. And, yeah, it's a great feeling. You know, there's no better feeling, I think, for a player to see all the support that a city gives you, and I really appreciate it all.
I wanted to ask you about the 1987 game, first game back against the New York Mets. You know, you've won championships before. You've had great games before. But is that the game? Like, you know, when you're going to be on the porch and the grandkids, you know, tell us about the, you know, the one game. Is that, you know, you'll be like, well, Major League Baseball screwed me around, son. And they colluded against me. They didn't want to pay me what I was worth. And then somehow I'm suspended because of it. And then I came back against the defending champions and went 4-for-5 with the grand slam. And you know what's amazing? And I grew up in Montreal, but, you know, watching this the other day and not really realizing that it was the game of the week too, man. You had Vin Scully calling that, man. How cool is that?
That was the coolest. I mean, you know, if I look back at my career and I look for a signature game, that would be the game, you know. And you know, people don't really realize that, you know, over the years that I was in Montreal, I think that's the only game of the week that we had in my career.
Really? Yeah.
So, you know, looking back, I mean, you know, I missed spring training. I missed the first month of the season. I go to extended spring for one game, and I get like 7 at-bats, and they tell me the next day I'm going to the big leagues and I'm going to play in the game of the week. And, you know, we've never had that. So after going through what I have went through, you know, that whole off season, it was definitely disappointing because, you know, I was not able to go to spring training. I missed the first month, and you know, it's hard as a player not being able to be out there with your teammates. And but it, you know, it was nothing I can do about it. It happened. I dealt with it, and I was probably the most nervous I've ever been in my life going into a game that game. So I don't know. Maybe I have to be really, really nervous to have big games. I don't know, but
that's great.
It really came out way better than I expected. But I really had a lot of fun playing in that game, definitely something that I'll always remember.
You know, I was watching the at-bat the other day, and it's amazing. You can hear the hecklers going after Jesse. They're like, come on, Jesse, you suck, man. And, like, they're gone. It's just, it was so much tension in the, and I was thinking, I was like, man, I don't know why you Met fans are so tense. You guys just won the World Series, man. You guys need to chill out a little bit.
Exactly. Got the save in the last game. So, I mean, I don't know why they're all over him. and at the time, you know, he had been pretty tough on me in my career. And that was just one of those times that, you know, I think, you know, the baseball gods was on my side that day. And they wanted me to really impress baseball for, you know, what they had did to me the previous offseason. And it all worked out for me, I think.
Tim, a lot of guys are fast, but it doesn't make them good base stealers. What made you such a great base stealer? At what point, you know, was there a mental aspect to it? Is it anticipation? Is it a feel? Is it, you know, picking up on the pitcher's delivery? What made you such a great base stealer?
It was all of that, really. I mean, it was knowing, really working hard and doing my homework on most of the pitchers, you know, having all that information. You know, speed plays a big role as well, but then, you know, you have to have that aggressiveness, you have to have that cockiness about you. And when you know everybody in the ballpark, as well as the opposing team, know where you're going to run, and you're successful doing it. That's just something that, you know, sometimes it's hard to teach, but, you know, there's some guys that I feel can do it. It's just a matter of having that mindset. So, you know, I work with the Blue Jays, and I work with our base runners in our organization, and that's something that, you know, I try and teach. And but, you know, you really have to have it inside, you know, and that has to be what you want to do. You know, I think a lot of times people feel like, you know, the stolen base is not as prevalent anymore. And I kind of feel like that right now, but I think eventually it's going to come back around because you have guys throwing over 100 miles an hour, so it's going to be tough, you know, getting on base sometimes or getting hits. And when you can can steal a base here and there, get a guy over, get a third base less than two outs, so you don't really have to get a hit to score a run, plays a big role in a lot of big ball games. So I think as the years continue to go on, I think eventually it's going to come back.
I agree. We're seeing teams have success with small ball right now. All right, Tim, I know you're a really busy man. I really appreciate you joining us. Before we let you go, we'll just play a little word association. I'll throw a name at you, and you just give me a quick thought about them. On the way out here, I got to ask you about this guy right now, and I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about him. Gary Carter.
Real big part of my career. I mean, I'm very lucky and fortunate to have been able to play with him, to have him as a teammate, and pretty much taught me a lot that I know about the game.
Another future Hall of Famer, Derek Jeter.
Another guy. I mean, I remember him when he first started in New York. Wasn't really sure what type of player he was going to be until that first year. And when he, his rookie season, 96, he took off running. I mean, he wasn't supposed to start that year. As a matter of fact, Tony Fernandez was supposed to be out starting shortstop, and he got hurt. And Jeter stepped in and just took off. I mean, very proud of him, man. I mean, because he worked really hard. He was a guy that you loved to play with, even though he was young. I was a veteran at the time, but very, very happy that he ended up, you know, being able to do the things he was able to do as a baseball player.
And finally, in closing, this isn't a person but a thing. The Olympic Stadium AstroTurf in the 80s.
Like pavement.
Yeah, concrete, right? Like.
but it was perfect for me, you know? I mean, it was fast. It allowed me to be fast. And, you know, I didn't have a problem with it. There were some guys that did, but it helped me out more than it hurt.
And finally, in closing, we had Steve Sachs on last week. He was a rookie. And I said, what do you remember about Blue Monday? He goes, I didn't play. I remember freezing my ass off in the dugout. So I ask you, Blue Monday, what's the, you know, Blue Monday?
My rookie season, you know, I wasn't really sure, you know, what I had got myself into. I mean, we had an opportunity. We win that game. We go to the World Series. Rick Money hit the home run. I was in left field when it happened. I watched Dawson go back, and I watched him look at the ball go over the fence. And it was I didn't know how to react, though. I mean, you know, as a rookie, you know, you just want to fit in. You want to be a part of the team. You want to be able to do some things to help the team out. And I felt like I did that. And we were a pitch short. We were a pitch short. And but at the time, I felt like, okay, it was just the beginning. We were going to go to playoffs every year for the next 5 or 6 years. Fortunately, it didn't happen. But it was a sad moment. I mean, I remember after the game was over, sitting down on the bench, myself, Dawson, Cromartie, just pondering what could have happened. And fortunately, things didn't work out for us.
Tim Raines with us, being inducted into the Hall of Fame, well-deserved at about time this summer. Tim, it was an honor to have you on the show. We could go on and on and on, but I know you're busy. You know, I got goosebumps just listening to you to tell some of these stories, man. Once again, congratulations. You know, it's official. You're one of the best ball players ever to play the game. Congratulations and much love from Expos Nation, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, man, and thanks for having me.
There's Tim Raines with us here. We could have went 60 minutes, 2 hours with Tim Raines talking baseball. Cam Stewart joins me next. no time for singing or games. Let's get down to business. It's hot roster time, and it's also time to talk some NHL hockey. We've talked about all kinds of sports, baseball with the Hall of Famer, man. It was great stuff. Steve Merrill talking NASCAR, college basketball. Let's talk some NHL hockey and see what Cam likes on the board tonight before we get to some DFS hot roster hockey. Sabres and the Jackets. Sabres, downward spiral. Jackets suddenly hot again, but I don't want to be laying minus 220 or 230 or 240.
Nope. I don't want to take Buffalo as a pooch, and I don't want to take Columbus, lay the juice, maybe in regulation, but there's games we like better. Gabe, pass.
Scratch. All right. This is a game that I actually have my eye on here. The Minnesota Wild taking on the Florida Panthers, in which the Panthers are in a free fall. Ever since they went on that road trip and they won, they've sucked, all right? And they're not going to make the playoffs. So what?
You're right. No, I just remember 2 weeks ago we were on the show. Hey, those Cats are hot. And then after that streak, they've been garbage. Minnesota, though, Gabe, I'll tell you something. They only had, five goals in their last four games. They've been really, really struggling, too. So I think this one's tough. I actually like James Reimer in Florida in this matchup, only laying 15 cents, almost a pick 'em. I think the Wild are cold.
Yeah, but camera one and camera two. Drew likes, he's camera one and two now. One and two, Drew.
Yeah.
He likes the Wild. He agrees with me. Wild worth a look.
And usually we take shots at this turkey, but Michigan just won in basketball, so he's hot.
Okay, you know who's hot? The Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, well, until last night, yeah.
But the Red Wings are terrible.
The Red Wings are terrible.
They're trying to tank it.
Here's another thing. Chicago's going to be in ill mood last night. They played at home, and I couldn't believe it. Bernier stood on his head. Are you kidding me? They lose 1-0 to the Ducks. Quack, quack. You come back with the Wings, I see an angry Blackhawks team tonight. Sorry, Detroit. I will lay a low number.
Yeah, Blues and Ducks tonight. I think the Blues could be where to look.
Favorite game on the board, Anaheim on that back-to-back beating Chicago. I think it's going to be good. The Blues are starting to play better defensive hockey, too. I like it. There's, I could see like a 2-1, 3-1 Blues win. Gimme St. Louis.
Tickets are going for $675 on StubHub for the Oilers and the Penguins in Edmonton tonight. You could buy a house in Edmonton for $800. You buy a house for $800 or one ticket for $675.
Seriously, if I had those tickets, I'd be scalping them large. Give me the Oilers, plus 110 as a small pooch.
All right, speaking of the Pittsburgh Penguins, maybe the best, the coolest first name in hockey, Leon.
What, Leon's Furniture? Leon Dreisaitl of Edmonton versus Pittsburgh?
Leon.
Hey, Leon, we love you, but actually...
Against Johnny Huberdeau.
Yeah, this is a tough one, Gabe. Huberdeau, 12 points in 14 games since he's been back, a little more shots. The problem I have with Dreisaitl is only 9 shots in his last 5 games. That's not going to get it done on hot roster. You get those bonus points for shots. You look for guys. So even if it's guys don't get either points, you look for shots. Gimme Huberdeau.
Huberdeau, interesting.
I like them against Minnesota tonight. Yeah. So and I'm not really down with Dreisaitl. I think Huberdeau is better.
Corey Perry versus Ryan Getzlaf.
Getzlaf? This is what we talked about.
It's just teammate on teammate.
Yeah. These are the teammate on teammate matches. Yeah. I'll go to camera 3, Hannah here from Winnipeg. She brought up a great point, Gabe. Last night, Getzlaf, the guy had no points. He had 17 penalty minutes and almost won his hot roster matchup because he's punching people in the face. He didn't have any shots on goal. He did nothing in the game and almost won. That's the thing you get with Chrome Dome. I love this guy. He's going to get it done. Perry had a goal last night for Anaheim. He's a pretty cold player. Give me Getzlaf. He does more.
All right. Big time matchup here. Patrick Kane versus Connor McDavid. Oh. Patrick Kane is minus a half a puck in this matchup. Kane takes on the Red Wings in Detroit. Meanwhile, as we mentioned, Connor McDavid hosting Sidney Crosby and company.
Patrick Kane's hot, Gabe. He's going to be angry tonight, too, not getting it done. Connor McDavid. Yeah, I think both are going to get points, but I have to look for Patrick Kane. I think he'll get more shots. Second in the NHL with points with 70. Very tough matchup because I think both guys deliver tonight, but give me Kane at home against the Red Wings.
All right, we've got a goalie matchup here. All right.
I actually love this matchup.
I'm assuming it's James Reimer.
Reimer, baby!
Do to Matt Cam. He likes Huberdeau. He likes the Panthers to win the game, so I assume, you're gonna like Reimer.
Gabe, you can't like Robin Leonard against Columbus.
No, Leonard's a good goalie, but he plays for the Sabres.
Yeah, and that's another thing, and you need the points for the win.
Sabres are 3-6-1 in their last 10. Columbus are a streaky team, but they're suddenly hot again. What, they're 7-2-1 or something like that?
I have to ask you a question. Who's got a better chance to win, Buffalo at Columbus or Florida at home to Minnesota? Yeah. So I'm going to go with Reimer, and he's had one bad game. He's been pretty good. These stats boards aren't really well. You're saying he's letting in a lot of goals. Before that, he had goals, one goal against, one goal against, one goal against. Don't worry, Reimer's not the problem in Florida.
The stat board probably just reads propaganda.
Fake news. Fake news. Reimer's okay.
Yeah. What are you giving us fake stats for? Fake news stats, man.
What do we got? Murray over under five?
Sometimes I wish my account was fake. I hit refresh.
I know.
How many times can I hit refresh? It's not going to look any better.
No, you bring up big points, Morency.
Matt Murray over under 5 points tonight, of course, against the Edmonton Oilers.
Morency, I'm going.
Averages 5.29 points on Hunt roster.
Keep digging. I like the upset tonight. Edmonton over Pittsburgh. So Murray, if he doesn't get the win, there's no way he's going to get 5 points. Sometimes you got to take a chance. Go Oil. I'm not paying $800 for a ticket. I don't care if it's McDavid and Crosby. That's craziness.
Big plans this weekend?
Nope. I have no plans, Gabe. No plans. I'm just going to probably order a couple deep dish pizzas and plow. Maybe have a couple beers and bet sports. That's what I do on the weekends. And I'll see you on Sunday night, friend.
Yeah, that's right. Red Heat and Raid. Check us out if you want an uncensored podcast in which we're going to discuss the bracket.
Things.
And what's the furthest thing we would do for money? That's going to be the topics.
I've done a lot of stupid things, but I'm intrigued.
Yeah, but we're going to set the bar. Like, you know, would you donate an organ? Stuff like that. That tune in. It should be interesting. How far would you go for money? Because we need money. Game Time Decisions continues. All right, let's get down to some business. Let's hit Sin City, Las Vegas, Nevada. I wish I was at this race this weekend. Imagine Las Vegas race, conference championship action. Great time of the year to be in Sin City. I think it's a great time to take Ryan Blaney. That's right, Ryan Blaney, $7,400. He's a fantasy stud at an affordable price. Put up 82 points in Daytona, 33 last week. Finished in sixth place here last year. Finished in second here before in the Xfinity Series. Good intermediate track race. Likes Las Vegas, has an average finish of 12.8 on this track with an average start of 22nd as well. So he's picking up spots and he's picking up laps. I think that Ryan Blaney's a good fantasy pick at $7,400. Joey Logano, I think I'm going to bet on Logano to win this race. He's never won before, but he finished second last year. He finished sixth in Atlanta last week. He has the best average finish of any active driver here, 10.7. Jimmy Johnson's won four times here, but I ironically enough, Logano's got an average finish of 10.7, four top tens. The dude's going to be in the mix. He's cheaper than Harvick. You could take Harvick, and you could take Kyle Busch. I'm staying away from both of them because Busch is from Vegas just because he wants to win so badly. Him and Kurt, they probably won't, and Harvick's just too expensive for me. Matt Kenseth, the guy's a monster here. Three wins, six top fives, a bunch of laps led. I like Matt Kenseth. Paul Menard, nice fantasy pick here. The guy's going to give you a nice 12th to 15th finish. Kyle Larson, he might win the race. And we'll wrap it up with Jamie McMurray, who's a constant top 15 here in the past. All right, let's get to our plays of the night here. We're going to go with the Milwaukee Bucks to beat the Pacers. Bucks playing better basketball right now, especially at home. Raptors always seem to beat the Hawks. We're going to take the plus 3 points. Let's go over 201.5 points. Raptors and Hawks. Celtics and Nuggets. You know the Nuggets have been home dogs 9 times this year. It's 9-0 to the over. Let's go over the number. Washington and Sacramento. The Wizards are killing it on offense right now. They're putting up like $120 a night. College basketball. Duke and UNC, they hate each other. They just played Saturday. UNC beat them. They're going to beat them again, later 4 points. Game's going to go over 154. Cal and the Ducks, this number's too low, man. It's going to go over 126.5. UCLA beats Arizona, and the game goes over 154.5. Other than that, you're on your own. May the winners be yours.